Hello and welcome to The Games Press, a podcast series in which I interview interesting people from across the video games media about their work and how they do it. Today's guest is Tyler McVicker, who you may know for his incredibly extensive coverage of Valve Corporation through his YouTube channel, which is today called Tyler McVicker, but used to be known as Valve News Network. I wanted to speak to Tyler today because, well, we've just spent the last 6 months at People Make Games looking into Valve ourselves, either through the lens of unofficial gambling being allowed to happen on Steam, or, more recently, we interviewed 16 current and former employees about what it's actually like working for this very unusual company. I'd recommend watching that video in particular before listening to this episode because, well, we'll be referencing a bunch of stuff that was talked about in that piece. It's called Working at Valve, A Fearless Adventure, or Lord of the Flies, and it explores the reality of being employed by one of the most influential video games companies in the world, and also a company that claims to have no job titles and no hierarchy. It's, like I said, very unusual. Now, Tyler has been covering Valve for well over a decade now, often dealing in rumors and speculation and all sorts of pieces that he and the rest of the Valve community have unearthed about future games and future projects via data mining. We'll be talking about all of that in today's episode, but also we're going to discuss Tyler's own feelings towards this company that he has, in a very real way, dedicated nearly half of his life to. Those feelings are complicated and have led to some mistakes being made along the way as well. And just, yeah, a whole range of topics to kind of unpack to do with being that close to a company, an organization that you yourself are not actually a part of. We'll be getting into that. It's a great interview, I think. But a quick word just before we get started. As always, I'd like to thank Loading Bar for supporting this show and the rest of our work that we do at People Make Games. If you don't know them already, they run three different gaming bars in the south of England, one in Hackney, one in Peckham, and one in PMG's very own seaside hometown of Brighton. In fact, if you're around in the Hackney venue during early December, I think, you may have seen me trying to teach the card game Coup to a couple of my childhood friends while being honestly really quite pissed. They're lovely venues, apart from me being really quite pissed, with a good roster of board games, arcade machines, and games consoles that are all free to play as long as you buy yourself a round of drinks or some food whilst you're there, because, well, otherwise, it's just awkward. Take a look if you're in the area, and thank you once again to them for supporting this very episode getting recorded that you are about to listen to right now, which sets me up very nicely to say, and now, here's my conversation with Tyler McVicker. Hello, Tyler, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Chris.
I have been looking through your work over the course of the last few days ahead of you agreeing to do this interview.
Right.
Thank you. I've seen you describe yourself as an independent games journalist, and also, I think perhaps much more recently, reject that word as well, the word journalist, I guess, in relation to what you do.
Yeah.
Which one is it? How do you see what your role is?
That's a really funny question, because I went to school for journalism.
Right.
I studied journalism for years at university. I hated my time in university because we were taught television journalism, like
oh
local
my God.
News and
Same.
Newspapers.
Same. Yeah. Broadcast journalism was a module. And I think we were recording to tape for most of it.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're probably not, like, how old are you?
32.
Okay. I'm 26. So yeah, we were recording to tape, and some camcorders had like to disc, like DVD.
Right.
And it was just me and my friend Nami were like having to film these puff pieces about local restaurants and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we just kept having to sit there and be like, oh, okay. So that's when you learn the hard way that most of the time journalism is not the fun muckraking, dig deep for stuff. And it's a lot of just like filling time with a lot of puff pieces. Yeah.
I always felt really bad when I was approaching people for interviews for university coursework
because
it was never going to really be published anywhere. Like we had a website of like university journalism, but no one was going to read
it. Yeah, so did we. So did we. Yeah.
But I felt really guilty for wasting people's time, particularly if you did speak about anything difficult, which, as you say, was a rarity.
It was rare.
But then, like, where's that going? Nowhere.
Well, there was this one class I had where every week you had to pitch a story as if you're in a newsroom.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, the thing is, when you live in the middle of nowhere in Ohio, nothing's really happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found myself pitching. I remember one of my stories was, hey, in the cafeteria, the the size of the pizzas shrank, but they're charging the same price. And so I had to like stalk the food court in our university for people ordering pizzas to then go, hey, can I ask you some questions for the newspaper about that pizza?
I love that.
They all said no, and I had to write a different story. Yeah. But to get to the question, I don't know what I am. I get a lot of crap from my audience about getting things incorrect, which when you're doing predictive journalism on a company that you even called opaque, you do run into a huge difficulty of trying to figure out how things work. Not only that, but for example, I have a podcast myself called Letting Off Steam, where I let people send any question they want, and I'll try and answer it to the best of my ability. I remember I said something along the lines of the Microsoft acquisition of Bethesda has turned some people off, and there have been exoduses from employees, and a bunch of people reported on that quote as if it was fact. So behind the scenes, I was talking to all of these very disgruntled ex-Bethesda employees that were telling me these things, but I'm not going to come up and be like, so I was talking to this person, and this person, and these are my sources. That proves my story. When you're an independent and you don't have a company behind you to back you up, you kind of just have to take the beating when a story's source can't be burnt and you can't really talk about it too much. And so, you know, I used to call myself a games journalist. A lot of people told me that's not what you are. You're an idiot. You're a dumb piece of crap. And so eventually I just got sick of like people being angry that I called myself that label. And so I just say that I'm Tyler. Mm-hmm. What am I? I'm Tyler.
Passionate gamer.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
I guess one of the bigger claims...
Yeah, I was expecting this question.
...you've made at the moment in relation to Valve is their work on something that was codenamed Citadel and now potentially is called Neon Prime.
You have been watching my stuff. Proud of you. Good for you.
Right. And that I think more recently you've said that you think it's at least partially been developed by Ice Frog, who... Mm-hmm. was the original designer of Dota and Dota 2. Mm-hmm. And you've had several videos about this topic where the story has changed between them because as more information has presented itself. And perhaps in the first video you released on the subject, it got picked up a bunch by the games media. That was when you were referring to it as Citadel. And I think back then there was a feeling that it might be something kind of like a shooter meets strategy game.
Yes.
Primarily with the Steam Deck in mind. And that one got a statement from Valve because of all the reporting that kind of came off the back of it. Would you like me to read the statement from Valve just to...
Oh, go ahead. Absolutely.
It's good to view Tyler McVicker's coverage with a healthy dose of skepticism. We think it's important to reiterate that while Tyler is a passionate gamer, he has no inside information about what goes on at Valve. As you know, any important announcements, blah, 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 blah. Right. I think that quote on its own does somewhat of a disservice to how on the money you have been on certain things over the years, like with the build-up to Half-Life Alyx. We'll get into that later on. But this brings up this thing you're talking about, which is when you say things in your videos, there is a credibility attached to that, and it can be reported on. And I imagine from your perspective, it can almost feel like it's... depending on how what headlines people go with, what details are picked out of your videos, how
it's kind of misrepresented
In
terms of how I present myself. I always say that when you're dealing with Valve software in particular, everything and anything and everything is speculation and should be taken with at least a pretty healthy dose of salt. Because, you know, even if what I'm saying in the current moment is true, that could get canceled. And it'll make me look like I'm wrong. Left 4 Dead 3 is an excellent example of that. In this case, I've been talking about Citadel since before Half-Life Alyx even came out. It was like 2018 that the first inklings of that. A good chunk of my information comes from, or related to Valve, because I do more than Valve. Please watch my Cyberpunk videos, everybody. A good chunk of my information comes from taking Valve's active development products, doing what's called a plain text to the DLLs, which is, you know, if you were to take the Linux DLLs, the Linux files that exist within a build of a game, the main ones that run the game, and you open in a text editor, every so often you're going to see like lines of actual readable text. You can feed that into a program and it'll print out each string, which is a line of readable text, in order. You then
whenever an update comes out, compare it to the previous version, and things that were added or removed can be seen easily. Citadel as a code name for a product has been known about since 2018. We found it doing that, and then we found out that using the Dota 2 tools, we could trick the map editor into launching into a, as if it was making a map for a project codenamed Citadel, and it would give me new features, like a top-down map view, a mini-map view, stealth bot AI pathing, which is effectively kind of hacking it to give you more information that you're not supposed to have. That's where Citadel came from. Following that, I did a big spread on Citadel. I got a New Zealand games reporter who interviewed Gabe on his super yacht to ask him point blank what Citadel was. He said he didn't know what it was. Right. But that day, a bunch of spectator parameters for Citadel leaked in a text document. So it was really fun to be like, oh, you know, he's lying. but there's a lot of projects always going at Valve.
Sure. I should say, to go back to that quote, it doesn't directly say this doesn't exist, right?
No,
it says
of course
that
not.
Some healthy skepticism is required and that Valve themselves will ultimately be the one that makes their own announcements.
Yes.
But it doesn't say this is totally wrong.
No.
So as I mentioned, with Citadel into Neon Prime, like you have this particular challenge, I think, with the work you do where, as you said, things change and you are having to make certain assumptions based on the data you have at the time and then sort of react as things present themselves. How stressful is that experience of basically, I often think with our work, like, we're only as good as our last video. Like, do you feel like you're only as good as your last, like, speculation and how accurate that was?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right.
And it's interesting because there's a lot of stuff that I've gotten right over the years that's so inconsequential that nobody will remember it, but I'm very proud of. Like Artifact 2.0, I called months in advance. We're in it for the long haul, guys. But at the same time, I've developed a significantly healthier relationship with this job over the last few years because there have been some really bad times born out of having a position such as mine, you know, and there's been a lot of like mental anguish and very depressed months and not getting a whole lot done and that kind of like cycling in on itself. But eventually you just have to take a look at it and realize it's all just so surreal and kind of dumb that I'm capable of doing what I'm doing as a job. You know, like if you step back and you think, okay, my job is to play video games, pick them apart on a very finite scale, technically speaking, read hundreds of thousands of lines. I say lines of code because the public understands it, but that's not actually true. Strings, and just take notes, ask people questions, hope someone answers a question, and then make enough money to pay my bills and support my wife. So it's like, I'm very lucky to be in this position. I worked my butt off to get here. And if people don't like that I do this, that's fine. If people, you know, want to kill me or, you know, steal all my money or you know, all this crazy shit I've been through because of this job, that's fine.
There's definitely going to be a section towards the end of this podcast where we talk about
harassment,
the experience of backlash from, from the Valve community. But I've never done any work with data mining whatsoever. It's not something I'm like super familiar with. Obviously, this is not information that Valve is psyched to have out there.
Well,
presumably each and every one of these moments is seen as kind of a misstep or something that got overlooked. What stops a company like Valve from doing a better job of holding this stuff close to their chest and not letting someone like you find it in the next update for Dota 2 or whatever it is?
It's a really good question, because the truth of the matter is Valve loves it.
Right.
If they didn't, I would not still have this job, and I give them credit for that. I have overstepped my bounds in the past in what I do, and I have been reprimanded for it by Valve Legal over it. But the thing that has always been maintained is they do like the types of videos I make that are speculative and looking towards the future, because it's effectively a hype machine that acts in lieu of marketing. Because Valve, in case you're unaware, has never really been one to market their own products. Usually when I say that, I get the rebuttal of, well, what about, you know, Portal 2 or the Orange Box had a bunch of television commercials. Well, those were actually done by EA when Valve had a publisher. I'm sure you haven't seen a television commercial for CS:GO or Half-Life Alyx. It's because Valve knows they don't need to do that. There are people like myself and thousands of other creators and community members out there that will make sure that anything they do spreads through word of mouth. So there are two different quotes that you can find probably. One is by Robin Walker during a Steam Dev Days talk in 2014. And the other is a Gabe Newell interview in sometime in 2011, where they state that they actually really like how people dig through their games. And they will even go so far as to hide things purposefully right. in their games to hint towards things in the future. And they're very proud of that. Now, I'm of the belief that the purposeful hiding of things has almost completely stopped. Because a lot of the hiding of things was mostly done for Team Fortress 2 and Counter-Strike and Dota 2. But all three of those games have significantly slowed down in terms of their like cool content drops for numerous reasons. That said, they know that it's happening. They know that even if they attempt to try and hide things, other ways of finding information will be discovered, and it's impossible to cover up your tracks. So why put the effort and time into trying to do it anyways if it's a fool's errand in the first place? And also, I can't say if this is still the case because Valve seems to be shifting quite dramatically lately. But if you're a company or an entity that people enjoy or, you know, are obsessed enough about that they would go this far as to find out what you're doing next, you're probably doing something right and allowing a community to continue to foster and speculate and have discussions and stuff is a healthy thing to an extent. It gets unhealthy, as we'll probably discuss, but it is an interesting thing to have happen to your game if you know how to handle it properly.
Yeah, I guess it gives almost like a drumbeat of discussion in the background. You mentioned like you have a interesting relationship, I'm not sure if that was the word you used, with the company, and that how you've described it sounds interesting. There's a symbiotic thing going on there, I suppose. But what are those conversations like with, you know, you've talked to Valve's legal team. Mm-hmm. What would be an example of something where they feel like, okay, this doesn't work for us? Mm-hmm. Like this, is it to do with the framing of it? Is it that you need to make it clear this is speculation?
No, what? It's the differentiation between content that was accidentally leaked through data mines and content that was legitimately leaked through a whistleblower. So there have been times in the past where I was given like actual assets, screenshots, videos, a build of something that's unreleased. And I have done reporting on stuff like that and almost immediately been reprimanded. So there is a line, and I have learned the hard way where that line is.
Okay. So the if it happens through data mining, the argument there is like Valve has made a mistake that is then out in the world and exactly. you have access to it, whereas the other version of it they feel is Valve property being
copyright distributed. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's always up to, you know, it's law, and law is ever changing, and I'm not a lawyer, I'm some dumbass from Ohio, so I'm not going to try and challenge a multi-billion-dollar independent conglomerate and their legal team. You know, I'll be destroyed. But there's also the personal side of it. Like, there was a documentary I was working on about Underlords that had to be canceled because I leaked some screenshots from Half-Life Alyx months before it was announced. You know,
right?
There are bridges that have been burnt through.
As in, that was a documentary you had some buy-in from.
I was talking with quite a few of the individuals that had at one point worked on Artifact and was working on Underlords. And we were getting kind of chummy and a lot of questions were being taken. But then when those screenshots came out, you know, because once in a while I'll get these info drops from Proton Mail accounts. And then most of the time it's just gore or porn or something just to like for shock value. But once in a while it's like, oh, shit, that is absolutely legitimate. You know, it burns some bridges. And so when you're playing with fire this close to the source, you really have to learn how to balance things out.
So those info dumps, are they typically coming from people like unsigned? Like it's just here's
yeah. So if you're unfamiliar with Proton Mail, it's like Tor browsing type stuff. It's as encrypted as it could possibly be. Anonymous drops, and so what you'll have are these throwaway accounts from either somebody who was recently fired, somebody who was recently had the project canceled, or somebody whom is just
has a reason to get this stuff.
Yeah. Sometimes it's because they're drunk. Sometimes it's because they're just stupid. And they'll just dump. And that's happened dozens and dozens of times over the last 10 or so years. I almost never know directly who's it coming from. And that also brings a lot of skepticism on my part, and a lot of work goes into trying to, like, okay, imagine being put in that position. You have a screenshot of an unreleased Valve game. How are you going to get that certified? That's impossible. No one who actually knows a thing is going to talk to you about it. So how do you go about doing that? And so, you know, there are ways, and the majority of my, I don't want to call them skills, but what I've learned over the years has been learned through mostly failure and pain. But I know a lot of what I'm doing nowadays because of it. So it's tough, you know.
So yeah, we talked about like your bread and butter for, and we'll get onto other outside of Valve stuff, but for your Valve content, your bread and butter is data mining and this kind of drumbeat of information that you can use your own knowledge and history to try and contextualize for the audience, right? And then you've potentially got someone providing you an asset or some kind of dump, and maybe you can do something with that, but there's a line to walk in terms of legality. To what extent is your job also speaking to people that like either work within Valve or have left but maybe know about certain projects?
Well, I will say that every time I have something that I would like to get certified, 40 or 50 people are going to get an email. And I'm on good terms with quite a few people, but what I end up finding is people become significantly friendlier to me when they leave Valve.
Mm-hmm.
There are many, many people whom would not have given me the time of day when they were at Valve, whom I now speak to almost once a week.
Mm-hmm.
I won't ask, like, you know, what is it like internally, because that just seems very egotistical, but you know, it's I do sometimes talk to people that are inside of Valve. I won't name drop them, but what I end up finding is when I do reach contact with somebody at Valve nowadays, I'm usually directed to Casey or legal, because it's not like the old days where I was just some unknown. Like it's me contacting someone from Valve, and they're all just kind of like, shut, just go away. That's enough of this.
So they're directing you to Casey or legal, which is essentially the, you know, the,
it's a brick wall,
the way in which the company itself can talk to you. What would you say your relationship with Valve, as not the employees individually, but as an entity, is like these days? I know, for example, you know, you were invited to the studio during the VR sort of build up.
Yeah.
So clearly at some point that's like you were within the chosen.
Well, actually, no, they didn't know who I was at that point. The story apparently goes was Gabe Newell was doing an AMA and I was restreaming it and like constantly refreshing his Reddit page and giving my own commentary on everything he was saying. At this point, Left 4 Dead 3 had just been canceled, so I was still under the impression that that was going to be their next thing. And so imagine that there's this conference room with a flat screen TV up on the wall with my friggin' live stream, my dumbass live stream that I had to run home from computer science class early to be able to make sure that I get home on time. And I'm just like trying to figure out how things are going. And the night before, my wife and I write out these really thoughtful, long-form questions about Source 2, stacked ranking, and then also, like, would you be willing to do an interview? Gabe Newell takes a question about halfway through the AMA where someone's like, hey, do you know Tyler McVicker of Valve News Network? And he goes, I've never heard of him. First time I've heard of him. And I guess I was really deflated at the time, and he saw that and felt bad. And so when he found
How did he see that you were?
Because I was streaming. my live stream was on in the room. And so when he answered that question, he saw me be like, oh, fuck. Okay.
Wait, in the room that Gabe Newell is doing is sitting replying to the MA, your live stream is on.
Yeah, my big dumbass face is there screaming about Left 4 Dead 3.
How did that get onto the... How did that happen?
Because I have a lot of silent fans internally, I like to call them. And I always learn who they were after they get fired or quit or something.
And that gets your face on the TV in the room at the time during the MA, and that leads to...
And so he says, he doesn't know who I am. I'm like, bullshit, that sucks. Oh, man. And then when he saw my really well thought out questions, three of them, he ignores the paragraphs. And then I ask, can I interview you? He goes, yeah, sure, email me. And then I elate with joy. And then I sent him this email like, okay, so what are we going to do? When are we going to do it? You know, what questions are on limits, off limits, etc. And he goes, okay, well, actually, I have an idea for something. I'm going to shop it around for a bit. I'll have Doug email you back. And so that's where they come up with the idea for the round table, because they're like, oh, this kid knows what he's talking about. We can't let him have a one-on-one with anybody. So let's put him in a room with a bunch of much older journalists mm-hmm. and have him fight for airtime. But my really naive, young, dumb, I had just turned 20. I'm the only one that shows up with a camera. And it's like Jeff Grubb and one of your colleagues from Eurogamer and some very old people. But it was so weird because everybody was really uncomfortable that I was filming them. I brought like a special microphone and I uploaded all of it that day.
Yeah,
and
I remember watching the video as soon as
they were
it ended.
Pissed that I right. did that. But I got permission, so it was fine. But the only reason it happened was because I asked Gabe on an AMA, like, can I interview you? And he goes, sure. You know what would be fun? Let's bring a bunch of people to us and then announce three VR games that we only release one of. Yeah. But yeah, so, and then after that, you know, I remember having a conversation with one of my sources on the phone about it. And he's like, yeah, that was so much fun. Gabe Newell loved that. And he especially loved this one question you asked, but there was also this other question you asked that was the stupidest thing he'd ever heard. And we still laugh about it to this day. So, yeah, nuts.
Can we just in terms of to round out that question about the relationship back and forth, last year you needed to make a public apology, I guess, to several... Well, not I guess. You had to make a public apology to several Valve employees.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Can we talk about that briefly?
Yes.
So should we start by just giving the context for the original video?
Correct.
What the topic was, if you want to sort of give that an overview.
Right. Okay. So lifelong Team Fortress 2 fan here. Mm-hmm. Team Fortress 2 is a video game that is multiplayer and relies almost entirely on servers that Valve owns. For the last 2 years, Team Fortress 2 has become more and more difficult to just play, due mostly to things that we call bots, which are effectively automated Steam accounts made in mass, controlled by a program to effectively just automatically snipe anybody trying to play the game to make games completely unplayable, right? Mm-hmm. So it would be a snipe, like multiple snipers on a server controlled by a program who are constantly killing everyone on the server and no one can actually play. This has become such a widespread issue that it's like a 1 in 5 chance to get a okay game of Team Fortress 2 up and running. And this is at the same time that Valve continues to ship cosmetic crates of community-made content that they do almost nothing and take 70% of the revenue from. So, you know, after so long of just being very civil on, you know, how are we going to get something like this fixed? Is getting something like this fixed possible? I got very hyper emotional, as I tend to do sometimes. And I made a video kind of doing a mail your congressman kind of thing. And so I was talking about the problem. And every so often throughout the video, I went, oh, and by the way, here is one of the people at Valve who works on Team Fortress 2, and here is their work email. Why don't you tell them what you think about this?
And I did this to five Valve head, what I call old heads, all people that have been at Valve for at least 20 years. And that got a significant amount of backlash because I was sharing these individuals' work emails and telling people, telling TF2 fans, hey, you know, maybe if enough people contact them.
I think that the mail your congressman comparison is an interesting way to look at it. I guess that because the difference here is they are game developers, not political actors who haven't necessarily signed up to. If you signed up to be a congressperson, you're walking eyes open into.
I completely understand where it's coming from, and I have apologized for it, and it was a really immature thing to do. Looking at the state of Team Fortress 2 and how these bots went from just cheating to becoming flagrantly transphobic and homophobic and racist and sexist and
my understanding of that is you would have the accounts changing their names to like
they would change their names to just the worst stuff you could imagine. They were filling the text chat with what you would expect.
Yep.
They would start flooding voice chat with what you would expect. And then they would start flooding like Steam groups and discussion boards. And it was just, it made the game a very hostile environment.
True.
A very, very unfun environment. Mm-hmm. And it had been an ignored problem for so long that I just got very frustrated and did something stupid about it.
You've pulled the video, I think, the next day or the same day, and then
same day,
same day, and released an apology. Did you ever get a chance to speak to any like clear the air with any of those people? Or?
No. You see, the thing about that is like all the individuals that were listed in that video were all people that are very powerful at Valve. These aren't like your standard low end. You know, Valve doesn't hire juniors, quote unquote, but, you know, newbie developers at Valve. These are all individuals that had a hand in Half-Life 1 or 2. Like, these people have been there forever. So I was shouting those specific people out because I know that these are the only people at Valve that would have the power to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And these are people that would have never spoken to me in the first place. Like, there's no way.
And what's the state of TF2 since then? Like, what has...
Oh, they fixed it almost immediately after. Because alongside my dumbass... You know, mail the shadow arm director, weird manager. Who knows what the managers are? It's them. They also had people protesting. There's like a handful of people that actually went to Valve's offices, cosplayed as Team Fortress 2 characters.
Mm-hmm.
And then that day they're like, yeah, we're going to fix it. Problem that we now run into is things aren't being done fast enough. And so any time that they come up with a fix for a single exploit that these bots use, the bot manufacturers come up with like four more exploits that they can utilize. So it is a war of attrition, and it is one that it seems like Valve is going to lose if they don't actually put, pardon my pun, a good amount of manpower on it.
Right.
But, you know, Team Fortress 2 is one of those things that I am probably unhealthily attached emotionally to.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you see this thing that you love so much be forgotten about, not only forgotten about, but like, I want to say destroyed by bad actors so thoroughly,
mm-hmm.
and you're as mentally unstable as I am, you do some stupid things. And yeah, I've lost friends over that, the emailing thing. I regret it. I wish I hadn't gone that far with it. I do wish that Team Fortress 2 was in a better place, but you know, you can't have everything.
Do you think there was any understanding from Valve there that this frustration that had bubbled up, not just from you, but from the whole community is being added to by the fact that the communication from Valve on whether or not they're even thinking about the problem or trying to tackle it is so sparse? Like, is that... Do you feel like Valve has learned from that moment?
Have they learned from it? No. Were they aware that there is a lot of frustration bubbling in the community about this? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, like, there's been frustration in every single Valve community for a decade. It's not exclusive to Team Fortress 2. There are major problems in all of their games that, you know, the people who play their games or create content for the workshop for their games or pay for their games would love to see fixed. And there's almost no communication on that front. The closest thing you have to that is the Twitter account for CSGO, which is just run by one guy. But at least that's something.
So, like, you think about what you said in your documentary, how it's like, if you're not working on something that's perceived as valuable, you're really putting your employment at risk.
True.
And so that means that if you're joining Valve as an individual who's like, I'm going to fix Team Fortress 2, you're really setting yourself up to not be working at Valve for very long. Because that game came out in 2007. Mm-hmm. And there are obviously things that anybody will see as more valuable than working on an update for a game that came out when some of you weren't even born. So, you know.
Yeah, I won't pretend that I haven't already watched you react to our our video on Twitch. But yeah, so it would be good to talk about.
It's a great video, man.
Thank you. It only took a really long time and stressed us all out a lot.
I know the feeling.
But yeah, I wondered like what you made of it. I feel like Valve is so clearly a company that you could easily write an entire book about and still feel like you've scratched the surface just because of its history, the way it works, the culture there. And so we absolutely have not, you know, created a one-stop destination for everything there is to know about Valve, and we clearly picked certain lanes to go down. But I'm interested, like, what is there anything that you feel we either fucked up or just that would have been interesting to kind of talk about more? Like, where would you have gone with it, do you think?
Okay, so your video is very much, I say your video, people make games as multiple people. Your channel's video is focused on, I'm going to say, more of a human rights perspective.
Yeah, I presumably most of the people listening will maybe watch it already, but yeah, we talk a lot about how it feels to work there, and also that goes straight into diversity within the company. Yes, definitely. More than the games itself.
That's fine. It's absolutely a valid path to take for a company like Valve, because unlike every other AAA studio, which is under significant scrutiny for these kinds of issues, Valve Software is uniquely positioned to be beholden to no one because they're entirely independently held. Mm-hmm. If all they wanted to do was continue to hire the same dude over and over again for the next 50 years, they could if they wanted to. But that doesn't mean that would be the right move for anybody at the company. I think the direction that was taken with that video needed to be taken because there are enough people going around being like, hey, why can't they finish games anymore? Mm-hmm. You know, that's a topic everybody touches on. This is a very different yet just as important, if not more important topic, as you touch on nearing the end of the video. I would say that something I wish that was gone into maybe a bit more would be like the day-to-day of a lower-end individual. Because Valve always says, oh, there's no job titles, no managers, no bosses. But we all know if you get hired at Valve tomorrow, you do not have the same kind of power as the person who invented Team Fortress 2. You know, so no, it's all just marketing to get you to work for them, and that's fine. However, it's such a lie that people, honest to God, think, well, if I work at Valve, I'll work on Team Fortress 2. I'll bring that game back. Or if I work for Valve, I want to finish Left 4 Dead 3. When in reality, it's okay, you start at Valve. Not only are you not told what you have to do in order to survive, but there is a very limited number of things that you can do in order to survive. So it's really, you are dropped into the deep end without any kind of flotation devices, and you need to sink or swim. And that is scary for everybody. Mm-hmm. And there's such a small, if not, there is no handholding to the point where it is psychologically detrimental to the majority of the people that actually make it through the interview process. And so because of that, it's very easy to box people out for arbitrary reasons. If somebody is like, ah, that guy seems like a shithead, you're done. You're done. It doesn't matter if you're the best person at your field. You're done. Because there are no safety barriers. There is no oversight. Nothing. It is sink or swim. And it is dangerous and it is scary.
I find a really interesting thing that honestly the one part of this video that we went back and forth on the most and required an entire rewrite of the script to try and feel like we were doing it justice is I spoke to basically three different types of Valve employees, either current or former, and like you genuinely do have the true believers who, you know, that it's almost like they're reading from that employee handbook that we referenced in the video. They are typically the people who, well, no, always from my experience of the interviews, the people who've been very secure there, done very well, and have managed to fit into this role that you know, how a Valve employee is meant to operate. And they genuinely see it as one of the best, if not the best place they've ever worked. Then there's the people on the other side of the table who have maybe been fired or left because it was so stressful, and they feel, you know, it's in the title of the video, like Fearless Adventure or Lord of the Flies, they feel that pressure coming from all around them. And then there are people that are in the middle that, like, one thing I will say in Valve's credit, or at least in the credit of the people I spoke to, is that quite a lot of them are willing to accept that Valve has problems and that it's a thing that does need to change. They just don't necessarily know how to change it or aren't necessarily being driven to be the person to do that change. So you get those people in the middle as well. And what we were trying to do in the piece is kind of capture bits of all of that. We include, you know, quotes that are essentially saying the opposite thing to one of the about a certain part of the company structure for a reason, because there are people that believe both sides of that. Where do you think you land on it? Like, are you, I don't think you're a true believer, clearly, but is Valve a company with problems that could be fixed? Or do you think that the structure is so rigid that it seems impossible? Where do you think you land?
So Valve's fluidity is a blessing and a curse in this circumstance. Because Valve has no rigid structure, changing that structure is not as difficult as people lead you on to believe. Valve worked best when they were hovering at around 100 employees. And the majority of those employees had been there for a while and knew how things operate. So I'm speaking Orange Box, Left 4 Dead 2, Portal 2 days. I think it's safe to say that however Valve has been operating for the last 10 years isn't working. You know, as the only real cool thing they have to speak for themselves is the Steam Deck and Half-Life Alyx. And the majority of those things happened in like the last 3 years. You had that long stretch where it felt like nothing was happening. And that is due in no small part to their structure. In order to be able to have the kind of tectonic shifts that would be required of Valve in order to be able to get to the place where they're shipping things publicly in a regular, you know, drumbeat or whatever, you would need a pretty significant shakeup in leadership. And short of, you know, someone passing away, I do not see that happening, because these positions are so lucrative, and for those that have been there for so long, feel like the best job in the world. No one's going to want to willingly leave. So it's going to be quite a long time before the individuals that have the drive and the ideas to shake things up are going to be in the kind of position to make sure those things occur, that it almost feels, why bother? You know, because there are quite a few people who have the deciding power who are very stubborn in thinking that the way things have been done since 1996 are the way things will always be done. And they keep pointing to Half-Life and Half-Life 2 and Portal as to why those are successful, but don't take the step back and realize, well, that was a very long time ago now, and the company culture does not allow for that kind of creativity anymore, which is something that should be stressed. Because there are so many people at Valve now, with the stacked ranking system in place, the kind of dangerous decisions that Valve used to make can't be done anymore. That's really not something that is done anymore. Like, Half-Life Alyx, as cool as it is the safest version of that project, if that makes any sense. Whereas Half-Life 1 pushed so many boundaries on so many different, like, levels of game design that it would be impossible to think of the current company structure creating a product that does so many things differently on that level. You know, the Steam Deck is an excellent product. I love my Steam Deck, but I also think the Steam Deck, instead of being this, you know, trend-setting, forward-thinking device, is more of a combination of many other people's ideas that have already been tried, polished and formatted in a way that only Valve can do. It's not an original thing. It's more of a polished up Valve style version of a thing.
Yeah, what you're describing there is Valve structure is limiting the kinds of ambitious products or games or ideas that are coming out of it. However, at the same time, it's also enormously profitable. And so it really depends on how you're looking at the company, I suppose. And for those people at the very top, there's a reason two of them potentially own super yachts, right? Like, that is a company that is doing an amazing job at like extracting money from the games industry into a small number of people's hands. And Quinns, who I work with, who has also done some reporting on Valve recently, was really trying to push us into, whilst we were working on this, into remembering that there's two very different things going on here. There's do we care about the next Half-Life game, or do we care about what the future of Steam looks like and how that affects the games industry? And it almost feels like two different companies sometimes when you're looking at it in those terms, or one that is supported so completely by the other. Some of the pushback we've received to the video, in fact, I will say, of all the work I've ever published, this one has received the largest number of shitty comments. Because
welcome to my own personal hell, my friend.
Right.
Yeah.
Because we talked about diversity and Black Lives Matter in relation to Valve, it's just extreme soul-sapping racism.
Go check my comments. Go look at my comments for the video I just put up.
I get. So there's the extreme racist who I'm going to obviously discount. But there was some pushback from people who I assume are well-meaning who say, well, why does Valve not being diverse warrant such a spotlight? Because the games industry isn't diverse. And couldn't you say this about any other company? And I do think actually in that case, the fact that Valve is responsible for Steam makes it a different kind of company to think about, because diversity in its employment will directly affect the way it handles the largest PC games platform there is. And yeah, again, it's this, I was like a pendulum between the two things of like, should this video be about Portal and Half-Life and Left 4 Dead, or is it about Steam? And it's obviously about both, but it can be quite hard to keep both versions of the company in your head at the same time, I think.
Don't beat yourself up about trying to distill what is likely the most complicated entity in our industry into an hour. It's an insane task, and y'all did as good of a job as you possibly could have, given the resources that you had in front of you, because it's Valve.
You mentioned that like the comments on the video that you just put up, which I think is that the one that's the reaction to our video?
So I took the reaction and I cut it down to like 15 minutes.
Sure. But is that the one that's mostly getting a lot of the comments?
It's mostly the comments I made with like little clips from your documentary for context. But yeah, woo, buddy.
I've had some experience with talking about diversity and representation in the games industry over the years, and there's always pushback, and Gamergate genuinely never went away. It just, sometimes you're lucky enough to be able to forget about it, and then something happens and those people come back with the same talking points. But I'm interested whether Valve, like the toxicity in Valve's community, it feels kind of different to me. I don't know if I'm just feeling a little on the edge right now.
It is. So in today's economy of thought, ooh, I'm a smart man. It seems like every corporation is going to be doing the hand waving in order to get the brownie points on social media. Mm-hmm. Valve is one of the few that don't, but it isn't not doing it because of an opposite belief. It's because Gabe Newell is a libertarian and he thinks that, you know, a corporation shouldn't, you know, put itself within politics, which is, in my opinion, slightly out of touch. Because not saying anything is a political statement in and of itself, and it allows the viewer to effectively put their own perception on that entity.
Yeah, I'd say like dozens of comments have been, Gabe Newell is based. Yeah, like I've seen that projection onto him from people.
Because of the opaqueness, because there is a vacuum of information, misinformation becomes gospel. So what you're dealing with is a lot of individuals effectively treating Valve as if they are Gordon Freeman, a blank slate that you put your own personality onto. And when somebody else betrays that self-perceived personality, mm-hmm. it almost feels like a parasocial relationship being destroyed. And also, you got to take into consideration that the majority of the sane individuals in the games industry moved on a very long time ago. So the people that are still around obsessing about, you know, Half-Life and Portal, which can't, you know, the latest Portal game came out in 2011, and the latest PC mouse and controller Portal Half-Life game came out in 2007. Obviously, there's got to be some kind of, I'm going to say, a bit of a self-report here, mental instability in the individual that makes that person feel so emotionally attached to the franchises and the individuals that work on those franchises. It's a perfect storm of shit where, unlike, say, when Hugo Martin came out and said that he'd love to be able to do a Doom game with Crash, the female Doom Slayer, and people did their bullshit on that. Mm-hmm. It's a very different kind of bullshit than when you're talking about Valve Software doing identity politics or woke ideology or stuff as the talking points that they'll say. Because to them, Valve Software is that blank slate that they have effectively projected onto. This has led to Valve's own franchises as becoming a bit of a haven for certain ways of thinking and certain ideologies. I have firsthand experience with just how much of a pushback you can get from these communities from doing just like the bare minimum liberal talking mm-hmm. points. There was to give you it's an anecdote, so it's not going to be, you know, enough evidence for you know what I mean, it's anecdotal, but so there was this one time I was on a team of individuals that were trying to do community made Team Fortress 2 updates, and one of the people on the team kept using the T slur over and over again. And in my mind, it's like, okay, in a professional environment, that will eventually get you fired. You know, let's try and act a bit professional here. And so I was like, we got to vote this guy off the team. I don't want this guy on the team anymore. And no one backed me up. And then eventually they kicked the guy off the team. Well, what happened was half of the team quit in protest against censorship and leaked the meeting audio and edited out the part where the slurs were said. So it just made me seem like a megalomaniac. And I've had incidents like that where individuals feel like it's completely okay to use the N-word or yep. be just really overtly chauvinistic or, you know, be very transphobic, like insanely transphobic. And they feel like they can get away with something like that with impunity because it's the Valve community. And whenever pushback is given their way, a very large portion of the community will come and fight for them. And I've experienced some pretty, not playing the victim, but I had my bank account. I call them the TF2 shitheads. My bank account got hacked into. My savings was wiped. People have shown up to my door. I've been mailed random illegal things. Somebody hacked into my computer and hard formatted all my hard drives. Like legitimate bullshit, like actual negative stuff. So I know what you're feeling. You know, you put your heart and soul into this crazy project, took you months, and now you think, okay, it's not going to get the kind of views it deserves because it's getting obliterated by the racists. Yeah. Yes. Because unless Valve comes out and says something, they think they're right always. And Valve will never come out and say something, even if the majority opinion of Valve employees is more in line with you than them. Gabe Newell will never allow anybody to actually make a public statement about it. So as far as they're concerned, you are wrong.
Why did you keep doing it? Like I don't just mean in terms of the direct harassment, but like you started out as Valve News Network in mm-hmm. 2011, I think just before Portal 2, right?
Yeah.
So, and now we're what, 2023, you've rebranded the channel to Tyler McVicker.
Just my name.
And you cover things that aren't just Valve, however, Valve is still a big, huge part of your life.
Yep.
What's that do to your feelings towards the those games and the company and the community. Like, that's a lot of stress that you attach to something that you also have these really warm feelings towards. And that's got to, so from personal experience, like I'm sort of done thinking about Valve for a little while. I think after this video, I need a break from it. It's been, we've been working on it for 5 months or so. And like, I'm wiped on it. I'm good. Like, how do you keep going with it? Like, what's the thing that drives that, and how has it changed?
As I've said, I'm a crazy person, number one, and that's not a joke. I'm medicated. I have a lot of problems. It's whatever. And that comes from some pretty severe trauma from my childhood and all that bullshit, and using Valve as a safe haven from all that. I used to allow my negative opinions of the community to color my opinions of the product.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an unhealthy way of looking at it, because why let the shitheads win? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, okay, so there are these like really racist pieces of shit that seem to predominantly run in the TF2 community. Okay. That's not going to stop me from not wanting to rewatch Meet the Team over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because Team Fortress 2 was something really special, and pretty much everyone will agree it's one of the best multiplayer FPS games in history.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was something really cool going on there, and I'm not going to let these, you know, these people ruin that thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
Why do I keep going? Because I love my family, because I love my wife, because I understand that this is something that will eventually lead to bigger things in the industry, in what I do. And it already is behind the scenes, but you know, I also love the craft of it. Data mining is stupid complicated and time consuming, and I wouldn't do anything else but that. It's just, you know, you can't let the shitheads win. You can't let them get you down so much that it almost feels like they have control over you.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you do, what was the point of anything that you just did? It's effectively like, okay, well, I wasted my time. No, I have been through so much shit because of Valve software, and I'm still here. The fact that I was invited to do a podcast means I'm still doing something right, and I still have an audience, even after the hundreds of times the dumbasses tried to, you know, get me to kill myself or something. And they tried. My advice to you, because I know what you're going through, is don't spend too much of your time reading comments. You were doing Eurogamer. You should know this. But I know that you're probably reading quite a few comments. Also, realize that the people who are commenting the shitty things it's a cliche to say, they are a vocal minority.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a vocal minority that are taking up the majority of your brain space.
True.
Fuck them. Seriously. Boyfriend, girlfriend, mom, dad, anybody that you have in your life that you love, spend time with them for a while. You did your job. Your video's out. Turn your phone off. Go drink some water and take a walk. Fuck. It's, you know, this is stuff that I had to learn the hard way. You're older than me, so you should be telling me this, but I'm telling you this.
Yeah, no, I've experienced it in the past, but I think when I was working for Eurogamer, you do actually get a little bit of distance where people are mad at Eurogamer, the brand.
Hmm.
And People Make Games does have an amount of that, but it's a more personal thing now. And also, the quantity of it has been kind of wild, like we talked about earlier, just because it's Valve and diversity and race, and it just, the quantity has been new, I suppose, for me. Something that hasn't come up as much in this interview as it perhaps did on your Twitch stream where I watched you reacting to the video, is that you carry a lot of frustration about Valve, the company, and more frustration than I was expecting, I think. The structural problems, the issues that were raised in the piece, and some of your own experiences with it. Presumably, when you started in 2011 as someone who was super into Valve games and excited about Portal 2, presumably that wasn't quite where your head was at then, or I'm not sure you'd necessarily even have started that work altogether. Has that been something that has come on over the course of like a decade plus of doing this work? And you said that, you know, You want to carry on, and like you can't imagine doing anything else. But how does it feel to have that kind of that opinion towards something that you dedicate so much time to?
I don't know.
Like you were mad in the live stream in a way that I wasn't expecting from a channel that used to be called Valve News Network, I suppose. Like you were genuinely mad at some of the stuff, and it caught me off guard a little bit, because I can go on and do a story about something like a different company now, but although I know you're doing stuff with Bethesda and Nintendo and CD Projekt, like mm-hmm. Valve is a huge
bread and butter.
Yeah, your bread and butter.
My wife can't have gluten. I shouldn't use that phrase, but
it stems from the fact that I have seen so much talent go to waste over the last 10 years. I made a video. My last video as Valve News Network was about 40 canceled games that we're aware of.
Right.
Right. Look, it's a common thing in the industry for things to get cut, for projects to get canceled. Mm-hmm. But not like Valve does it. Not even close. Because an investor will want you to at least salvage the work. Valve will work for years on something with the top talent in their field, only to have it sit and rot on a tape drive for the next 20 years. It's frustrating to know that there is an alternate reality where Valve did finish Half-Life 3 and Half-Life and Left 4 Dead 3. And we're able to continue the growth and the trend in games instead of just scraping 30% off of everybody else's work. You made a good point that it feels like Valve is two different companies. And effectively, they are. They don't need 300 people to run Steam. They've proven that. And, you know, if someone was able to prove that Steam is a monopoly, which it... I'm not going to say that out loud, but, you know, and they had to split the two things up, then that would mean more games would come out. But it's frustrating because the reason I continue to do it is because I know that I'll love whatever they put out. Half-Life Alyx made me weep. Half-Life, like, there is a video with like a million views on it of me finishing Half-Life Alyx and and crying.
Yeah, I've seen it.
And that's somebody, people like my family was like, you made that up. But it's like, no, it's because that was the proof mm-hmm. that the spark is still there. They can still do it. It's just they don't. And that's so frustrating. I'm so angry because I know the potential better than most. I know what they are capable of. It's like, okay, here's a tidbit that you get that nobody else has ever gotten. One of the times that I spoke to Valve Legal, they described some of my actions as disappointing because they like me. They're like, we've seen you grow up as, you know, and watching you do this, it's just so disappointing. Valve, I feel the same fucking way. You know, growing up and seeing the Orange Box, Left 4 Dead 1, Left 4 Dead 2, Alien Swarm, rest in peace, Portal 2, CSGO, Dota 2, and then silence until 2020. I'm disappointed because I know y'all are like, you claim to be the best in the industry and you proved that with Half-Life Alyx, but Half-Life Alyx is behind $1,000 paywall. Mm-hmm. So no wonder it didn't sell as well as you wanted it to. It's just like, look, I know that they're capable of being the pinnacle of the industry. I know that they're capable of setting the standard for the rest of the industry to follow. Valve is uniquely positioned to make the entire industry a better place for everybody if they wanted to. They actively choose not to do it. Valve alone could have made VR significantly more successful than it currently is and not Facebook's play area. They didn't. Valve alone could have completely revolutionized how multiplayer FPSs function. Well, they've been resting on their laurels from CSGO for quite a while now. So, okay. And Valve alone could have told the absolute best story in all of video games. But then they stopped right when it got good. So, yeah, I'm just a little frustrated in y'all.
A final note, I guess, maybe to wrap it up. It's interesting that you talk about the company's great potential that you're thinking of so much. the few times that I've done pieces on games that didn't come out and what they could have looked like, an interesting thing happens when you're reporting on that is that you get to some extent idealize them. You
fill in the gaps in your head.
Exactly. Yes. And so the game that you imagine has far fewer of the faults than maybe it possibly ever would have, like, had it, the warts, I guess, that had it.
No,
ever,
I know what you're saying, but...
And I wonder also, a unique position you must find yourself in is that you are constantly thinking about the potential of Valve. Like, every video you do is, particularly on the speculation side of it, is to do with things that that may come out of Valve or
the
may
subtext
not.
The subtext of all my Valve reporting is, you have so much wasted potential. Fuck. Like, there was going to be an Adult Swim Team Fortress 2 TV show animated in Source Filmmaker. The expiration date, 15-minute short, was the pilot for that show. It fell through because Valve wasn't communicating with Adult Swim enough, and they canceled it. Fuck. Valve was working on Half-Life 3 as late as 2015, and it got pretty far. I've seen things. Wow. Fuck. Left 4 Dead 3 was in a playable and possibly releasing an early access state in 2016, but Source 2 wasn't finished and no one wanted to do the finishing up work. It would have been nuts. Fuck. So, like, yeah, I get what you're saying. You know, you idealize the beta, you idealize what's not there. Valve is very unique in that they will cancel stuff that's almost done. Just because it's not good enough or there's an internal dispute or some dumb bureaucracy. Especially lately. So, I'm not wrong to think that the version of Valve that actually finished those products is a far more respected Valve than what we currently deal with.
Well, I hope you don't end up adding Project Neon to that list.
Neon Prime.
Yeah,
it's worrying because they've already cut some of the more experimental features, like the VR stuff and, you know, the RTS hybrid stuff. But, you know, big ass like battle royale sized map with train systems to allow you to fast travel across the map and really long matches and self-described experimental multiplayer combat systems, and yeah, it'll be cool. It's apparently Half-Life themed, so I'm all down for that. And also, you get future YouTube videos can quote me on this so I can have my little I told you so moment again.
All right, well, Tyler, thank you so much for making time to talk to us, and for also taking the time to watch our piece and not completely savage it on your Twitch stream, which I personally appreciate it, even if I didn't say anything in the Twitch chat.
I'm going to DM you on Discord, and if you're still reading messages and comments, I'm going to block you.
Okay, that's fair.
It's punishment.
That's fair. You're not the only person to be saying this to me right now, so
right, yeah.
Maybe I'll start listening. Tyler, thank you so much for chatting, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, man.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Games Press. If you'd like to see more of our work, head over to our YouTube channel and have a nosy around. Or, I suppose, listen to more episodes of The Games Press. If this is your first one, there's others. Or if you'd like to support what we do directly, the very best place to do that is over at patreon.com/peoplemakegames. Cheers, talk, bye-bye.